All right, so let's get into this. When you think of Dante's The Divine Comedy, I mean, for a lot of us, it's just this huge medieval poem, right? You think of demons, fiery pits, maybe a high school reading assignment you didn't love.
Yeah, exactly.
But the more we dug into the sources you sent over, it's pretty clear this isn't just some ancient map of hell.
Not at all.
It's this incredibly profound three-part guide, a kind of allegorical blueprint for, well, for spiritual well-being, for finding purpose.
And that's the mission for this deep dive, really. We're looking at this classic text written way back in the early 1300s as a modern, actionable framework.
A framework for the soul's ascent.
Yes, a path from confusion to clarity. We're going to try and pull out the modern meaning from Dante's journey through the Inferno, the Purgatorio, and the Paradiso.
And really focus on a few key things like free will, divine love.
And crucially, why the poem's very title, The Divine Comedy, holds the key to its whole promise.
Okay, the title is the perfect place to start because that's a huge aha moment right there. We hear comedy and we instantly think funny.
We think it's satire or jokes.
But that's not what it meant to Dante in the 14th century.
No, it's a really essential distinction to make. In classical terms, a tragedy was a story that started out well, but it ended in ruin, in sorrow, in death, a great fall. A comedy was the complete opposite. It was defined by its upward trajectory. It had to start in a place of difficulty or confusion, what Dante calls the dark wood.
But it was guaranteed to end in joy.
Guaranteed. It ends in resolution, enlightenment, and union.
So the structure itself, just moving from the depths of hell through the struggle of purgatory and up to paradise, that's not just a plot.
It's the whole point.
It's Dante telling the reader, and probably himself, that this upward path, this redemption is possible. That's the journey.
It's the promise. And to really feel the urgency behind that promise, you have to understand the man who wrote it. Dante Alighieri wasn't just some poet in an ivory tower.
No, he was a major political figure in Florence.
A huge player. He was a poet and a philosopher, sure, but he was deeply, deeply involved in the messy politics of his city.
And that involvement, specifically with one political faction, it basically ruined his life.
It did. His side, the White Guelphs, lost power. And in 1302, Dante was permanently exiled from Florence.
And we have to stress, this wasn't just like, oh, he had to move. This was a catastrophe for him. He could never, ever go home again.
And that context is everything. The poem famously opens with him saying he's lost in a dark wood.
Right.
That wasn't just some, abstract existential dread. It was real. It was the despair of losing his home, his status, his entire purpose in life. He's literally writing his way out of his own personal devastation.
The author is the main character.
He is. And his search for spiritual meaning is completely tied up with recovering from this terrible exile. It just raises the stakes for the whole journey.
And because he's lost, he needs guides. The first one he gets is Virgil.
The great Roman poet, yeah, author of the Aeneid.
And Virgil guides him through hell and through purgatory. He represents what the best that humanity can be on its own.
That's a great way to put it. Virgil, who lived long before Christ, he represents human reason, classical wisdom. He's this pinnacle of virtue and rationality. He can figure out any moral problem just using his mind.
He's the absolute limit of what our intellect can achieve.
Exactly. But here's the twist, and it's almost heartbreaking, and it's central to Dante's whole worldview.
Virgil can't finish the journey.
He can't. He gets Dante to the gates of paradise, and then he has to stop.
Why?
Because he was a pagan. He lived before the Christian Revelation. And Dante's making a massive theological point here. Reason alone, no matter how brilliant or virtuous, is not enough.
It's insufficient for salvation.
You need something more than just logic to reach the ultimate truth.
And then the something more shows up in the form of Beatrice.
Right. Beatrice Portinari. Now, she was a real woman that Dante knew in Florence, someone he idealized. But in the poem, allegorically, she takes over right where reason hits its limit.
She represents divine love.
Divine love, spiritual enlightenment, grace. She's the one who can explain theological truth. The transition from Virgil to Beatrice is the whole argument of the poem in miniature.
So the personal and the cosmic just merge in her.
Perfectly. He takes this human love and elevates it into a spiritual force that's the gateway to understanding God.
So with reason to get him through the darkness and grace waiting to lead him into the light, he starts his descent into the Inferno.
And the Inferno It's brilliant. It's structured like a giant funnel with 9 circles, and the moral logic is all based on this principle of contrapasso.
The punishment fits the sin.
Or, more accurately, the punishment is the sin, just made external. It's an ironic reflection.
And the layout isn't random. It tells you what Dante thought was truly evil.
Oh, absolutely. The upper circles, they punish sins of incontinence,
yeah.
Lack of self-control.
So lust, gluttony, greed.
Yeah, failures of restraint. But the deeper you go, the sins get worse because they become colder, more malicious. The lowest circles are for sins that use reason and intent.
Fraud, treachery.
Betrayal. The willful misuse of the intellect to harm another person, that, for Dante, is the absolute worst.
That moral logic is so clear.
Yeah.
But the real lesson of hell, the one that really sticks with you, isn't just the punishments. It's what the souls are doing there.
Yes. This is the crucial point for anyone listening. The souls in hell aren't just suffering. They are hardened in their sins.
They're stuck.
They're frozen in a state they chose. They had chances to change, but they cling to their pride, to their excuses. They do not repent.
So damnation, for Dante, is a choice. It's the stubborn refusal to change.
It's locking your own will away from anything good permanently.
Can you give us a kind of modern version of that, something to make it click?
Sure. Think of willful self-destruction. You know, the person who knows their behavior and addiction, constant blame, whatever it is destroying their life and the lives of people around them.
But they just double down.
They double down. They justify it. They blame everyone else, their past, their boss, the world. Instead of seeking change, they've used their free will to choose stagnation. They have trapped themselves. That is a modern inferno.
Wow. That really lands. So if hell is the will that's hardened and closed, purgatorio has to be the exact opposite.
The absolute antithesis. Purgatory is temporary, it's defined by hope, and every single soul on that mountain is on their way up.
It's spiritual rehab.
That's the perfect term for it. It's a mountain of cleansing. The suffering there is medicinal, not vengeful. And the souls, they want to be there. They're willing participants in their own healing.
So how does hope work there? I mean, if they're suffering, how is hope an active force and not just waiting for it to be over?
Because for Dante, hope isn't just wishful thinking. It's the active, determined will that's driving the change. He says hope kindles a flame in the heart that leads one onward, even through pain.
So every painful step up the mountain is an act of hope.
Every step, every prayer, it shows that the will is struggling, for sure, but it is fundamentally open to healing. It's turning your face toward the sun, even when the climb is agony.
Which puts free will right at the center of this whole thing. He's rejecting fate. Or determinism.
Completely. There's that key line in Purgatorio. You are not constrained by the stars. Your will is free. We are responsible for what we choose to love. The struggle itself is proof that the will is still alive and fighting.
So once the will is purified, once it's finally ready to align with its highest purpose, that's where Beatrice takes over and we go to Paradiso.
Right. And this ascent into the heavens, this is what true spiritual freedom looks like. The soul doesn't lose its identity. It doesn't become a drone.
It becomes more itself.
It becomes truly free because, for the first time, it only desires what is aligned with ultimate love and truth.
That's such a powerful idea. We usually think of surrender as losing control, but Dante is saying it's the only way to find your authentic self.
Yeah. Think of a master musician. They've practiced the rules of harmony so much that they're second nature. They're not thinking about scales anymore.
They're just playing.
They have total freedom within the structure of the music. For Dante, true freedom is when your will is perfectly in tune with the harmony of the universe.
And what is the source of that harmony?
Well, God isn't some angry old man on a cloud. God is the animating force, the source and structure of all of it. The poem ends with that incredible line describing God as the love that moves the sun and the other stars.
So the whole universe is just an expression of that love.
It is. And for our souls to find well-being, we have to align with that cosmic love using the three great virtues.
Faith, hope, and charity.
Exactly. Faith is trust in what you can't see. Hope is that forward-looking drive for betterment. And charity is the highest of all.
We really need to define charity because in modern English, it just sounds like giving money to a cause.
Right. We have to avoid that. Dante's charity or caritas is so much more. It's not just an action. It's a still of being.
It's divine love.
It's divine love flowing from God, directed back to God, and then extended selflessly to all of creation. It's the spiritual love that sees the connection in everything.
When you align your will with that, that's when you experience joy.
That's it. Dante isn't saying suffering is good. He's saying suffering can be a catalyst, a mirror that wakes you up. But joy, Joy is the signpost. It's the reflection that tells you you're already moving in the right direction. It's not a future reward. It's a present reality.
Okay, let's bring this back down to earth, because Dante was also intensely political. He wasn't afraid to put powerful people, including popes, deep in hell.
Oh, he was scathing. In his time, the church was supposed to be the moral authority. And he was enraged that so many church leaders were chasing political power and money, corrupting their spiritual mission.
He wanted a clear separation of church and state.
A moral church and a just secular government, each in its own lane.
Which is fascinating, because our sources point out that in our modern context, it's often the other way around.
It feels like an inversion, doesn't it? Dante worried about the spiritual becoming too worldly. Today, we often see politics trying to become the source of public morality. Political movements co-opt moral language, and religious institutions end up just reacting to them.
The danger is the same, though. Misplaced authority leading people astray.
And that's why he judges corrupt leaders so harshly. A corrupt pope is worse than a simple murderer in his system.
Why is that?
Because of the multiplied damage. That leader has betrayed a sacred trust. Their failure doesn't just damn them, it misleads countless other souls. It's treason against the whole divine order.
Okay, so this entire framework, from the dark wood all the way to cosmic love, it's incredible. But how can someone listening right now apply this epic medieval poem to their life today?
We can actually distill it into a practical 4-stage framework for self-reflection using the realms as our guide.
Let's make it actionable. Stage one.
Stage one is awakening. This is the inferno phase. It's just about having the courage to face what's holding you down. The question to ask is, what in my life feels misaligned with my values or my spirit?
And the action is just to name it. Identify one habit, one relationship that you know is dragging you down. That's the first step out of the dark wood.
Right. Then, stage two, reordering. This is purgatory. It's the active, hopeful climb. The guiding question is, how am I being called to change? What small, maybe painful, step can I take?
So the action is to commit to one small daily practice. Maybe it's 10 minutes of quiet, or finally writing that apology, or just getting up and moving. Something that shows your will is open to healing.
And stage three is belonging. This is finding paradiso in your daily life. It's about presence and gratitude. The question is, where do I feel connected to something bigger than myself?
And the action step could be to just practice awe. Take 5 minutes. Look at a tree, listen to a piece of music, whatever it is, and just let it anchor you in that feeling of harmony.
And finally, stage four, trusting. This is about looking toward that eternal joy. It's putting your hope in the unseen. The question is, how does the idea of an ultimate good affect how I live my life today?
And a simple action for that could be one act of selfless charity, Dante's Caritas. Do something for someone with zero expectation of reward. Just to feel that sense of universal connection.
It all comes down to this. Spiritual well-being isn't about having no problems. It's about having a sense of orientation and alignment with that vast, ordered truth of the universe.
It's an incredible map, moving from rational understanding with Virgil to moral cleansing and purgatory, and finally to this mystical vision with Beatrice, all held together by faith, hope, and charity.
The journey starts with one man's personal tragedy, but the destination is universal.
So if we take Dante's final vision seriously, that we each have a unique thread in the fabric of the universe and that God is the harmony that holds it all together, we have one last question for you to think about.
What specific action today would align your unique thread back into that divine song?
A moment of virtue, an act of selfless love, a decision rooted in truth.
I am walking toward the light, not just beyond this world, but already within it.